Craven Cottage, make some noise for the team of the Fulhamish Podcast!
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. And on today's episode, we're going to be previewing the return of Fulham this Saturday against Newcastle United at the Cottage. We'll also be rounding up the international break for Fulham's players. And of course, we will mostly be discussing Alexander Mitrovic. 50 goals now for Serbia. 4 goals in 2 games in the Nations League this international break, and the hype around him is getting enormous. Can we say we told you so? Yes, we can. I'm joined by the regular Thursday club today of Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, mate. How you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And Peter Rutzler, hello.
Hello. Hello, Sammy. How are you? How are you, Jack?
Yeah, good. Good. Can't complain. All's well. Yeah. How was your holiday, Peter?
Yeah, it was pleasant. Nice to get away. You know, turn off the phone and disappear. That's good.
I don't know if you listened to last week's Thursday Club. You were obviously on holiday, so I wouldn't have expected you to. But we did discuss briefly, where has Peter gone on holiday? Because none of us knew. And we did a little bit of a, I wouldn't really call it a sweepstake, but we all just gave our ideas. Can you do the big reveal? Where did Peter Rutzler go on holiday?
I went to Greece.
Whereabouts? Which island? Or was it an
Skopelos.
Island?
It was an island in the North Aegean.
Is that a beachy holiday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's quite quiet. Beaches, small island. Yeah, very chill.
I'm going to say that Jack won that. So I said that you went camping in the New Forest. Drew said that you went to Spain. But Jack said that you went to Italy. So I think Italy wins geographical proximity. None of us said Greece.
I'll give that to Jack. Yeah, well, to be fair, camping in the New Forest isn't a bad guess because I haven't been abroad for a while. And it's the kind of thing I'd do. So, you're on the right lines, just not this time.
No, I think you made the right choice as well. It's not been that nice of weather in the last couple of weeks. I think, I'm glad you've had a good holiday. Let's look then at all the stories from the last couple of weeks, the last week in particular. And let's start with the big man, Alexander Mitrovic. 50 goals for Serbia, 4 goals in 2 international games, a hat-trick against Sweden, and then 1 last night against Norway. Jack, it feels like the Mitrovic hype is as big as I've ever seen it. So many people from so many clubs are banging on about the talents that we all knew he has had for donkeys, but finally the world is opening their eyes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a great thing for, you know, for Alexander generally, but also, you know, we look at this and we've talked a lot on this pod about the fact that Marco Silva has built a team around him, yes, but also, you know, helped him to develop as a player and understand, you know, the things he's best at and the things that he can do to kind of limit his weaknesses. And I think that's what we're seeing at the moment. We're seeing a player who ultimately is, you know, full of confidence in his own ability, but also who is showing that he's taken that kind of, you know, uplifting club form that we saw to such great extent last year and into this new season, and taking that onto the international stage. And look, when we talk about, you know, Mitrovic from 2 years ago, right, when we were in the Premier League, he was out of the side in terms of where Scott Parker saw him at this Fulham side. He misses that penalty, obviously, against Scotland. That means that Serbia don't go to the European Championships. And you know, how quick that international kind of redemption arc has come round. And look, I think we've seen that on both club and country level. You know, it's been super interesting to watch, you know, a player's development through this period. No one's ever thought that Alexander Mitrovic is a bad player, you know, who works or supports or has anything to do with Fulham. There's kind of no doubt about that whatsoever. The question was whether his limitations in terms of speed or in terms of that ability to press were too much for him to make that step up. And he has answered those so comprehensively over the last 12, 16, 18 months that I feel like this is a kind of natural progression. And we are seeing Mitrovic in his final kind of evolved form in the prime of his career. It just feels like everything around him at the moment feels like it's going right. And it's so wonderful to see because he is such a brilliant footballer.
I mean, Peter, 50 international goals is such an achievement. And my first thought was like, well, it's Serbia. So like, but actually, no, that doesn't make any sense. Serbia have to play the same teams that all the big nations have to. It's not like because they're Serbia and they're maybe not one of the traditionally big football nations that they get easier games. I mean, Harry Kane, 51 goals for England. Obviously, the stat that was doing the round last night was that Cristiano Ronaldo took 114 international games to score 50 international goals. Lionel Messi took 107. Alexander Mitrovic has taken 76. Now, look, I'm sure there's reasons why you should take that particular stat with a pinch of salt, given maybe where they were playing, their points in their career, etc. But still, it's such an unreal achievement, like for him to get to 50 international goals this quick.
Yeah, no, it is. The statistics you've mentioned pretty much outline that, not least when you compare it to who's been regarded as the best players on the planet in the last decade or two as well. So international football is, you've got to bear in mind as well, like we're talking about a country who are producing, particularly in the last few years, high quality strikers. And in that context, he's retained his place and continued to score goals. He's always scored goals for Serbia. They've gone through different coaches. They've gone through different periods of performance level. You know, at the moment, they're on a real crest of a wave. They're performing very, very well, getting some really impressive results and are in the best possible place, really, you'd say, coming into a World Cup. But it's not always been like that. You know, I mean, Jack mentioned 2 years ago, you know, coming out of the Euros qualification, the disharmony, the unhappiness there was about some of the performances and the team performances from Serbia, considering the players that they had. Obviously now under Dragan Stojkovic, they're a different animal. And I think it's worth mentioning Stojkovic because I don't think he's someone we would normally touch on from a Fulham perspective. We obviously have done when Serbia have succeeded, but he's a really, obviously he's a very famous former player, and he's a really charismatic character. I think we saw that in his pre-match press conference out of the Norway game, where he was asked about Haaland, and then he turns around and says, "I'm not really worried. I've got Alexander the Great." He's also had quite a big influence over this past 24 month period, because even at the peak of that difficult season under Scott Parker in the Premier League, you know, Mitrovic missed the penalty, but it was the following international break in March where he scored some brilliant goals. And that's partly stemmed off the back of having conversations with Stojkovic, and Stojkovic saying, you know, you're still my man. You're still Serbia's, you know, finest goal scorer. Then he broke the record, of course, becoming their all-time greatest goal scorer. And that influence has been huge. And we see that's, you know, seeing that still on the international stage, he's still scoring at a remarkable rate. 50 goals at international level is superb. And that's been mirrored, of course, by the second impact that's happened, which is with Marco Silva, which has completely transformed him and taken his game to a new level. And he's a player that, it's like with most things in football, you know, what makes football so great and so enjoyable is you get players in so many different shapes and sizes that can do so many different things. And, you know, if you ask Mitrovic to sprint 100 metres, he's not going to be quick. If you're asking him to run in behind, that's not his game. But if you build your game around what he does best, his ability to link play, his ability to score goals, pick up the spaces in the penalty area, right place, right time, to have that kind of influence and benefit from it, go for it, build your team towards it, then you're going to get results. And that's what's happened here. And you know, confidence is massive too. He's playing, it's almost like he's flying, and he just floats around at the moment. He's trying things that, you know, we didn't think would happen. You know, on the opening day, he's going up to Van Dijk and sitting him down and winning a penalty. You know, that's confidence. And that's the product of the environment. It's a product of the way the teams are set up, both national team and then also especially at Fulham, playing an attacking style, playing to what he does best, and you know, he's getting the rewards, Fulham are getting the rewards, Serbia are getting the rewards, and, you know, he is in a fantastic moment. And as Jack said, you know, when you think back to 2 years ago, I was speaking earlier today with a contact in Serbia, just thinking about that point. You know, it really was the lowest point of his career when he missed that penalty and against Scotland. Considering where he was at Fulham, he was unhappy. You know, the summer before Silva comes in, there was an expectation that he would go. Like, it really is a remarkable turnaround to get from that point to where he is now, and is reflective probably of his character, but also the support that he's had from his club and his country. So we're going to continue to talk about him all season, but his story is a fantastic one, and he's a top class striker, one of the best in the world.
I mean, Jack, I'm obviously looking forward to the World Cup from an England perspective, although maybe I shouldn't be considering how awful we've been. I'm almost as excited for Serbia's World Cup. Like, I'm genuinely got to that point now that I am making sure that for all three of Serbia's games, I'm around to watch them. Like, and actually, you look at their group, they've obviously got Brazil. That's incredibly difficult. Switzerland are no mugs, as they proved at the last tournament. We know that Cameroon have got some good players from one of our former...
Cameroon have had an absolutely dreadful international break. I woke up at 10 a.m. earlier last week in order to watch them lose 2-0 to Uzbekistan. Okay. They have been rubbish. Yes, they do have some good players.
So it's a difficult group. They would then play, if they got through the group, either the winners or the runners-up of Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea. I see no reason why Serbia can't get to the quarters.
Yeah. They've definitely got to be looking at this and the form that they're currently in. Obviously, just been promoted from League B to League A in the Nations League with that performance yesterday. And I think everyone will take a lot of heart from that. They'll get should get at the very least a decent group for the next European qualification, European Championship qualifications. So, you know, everything is kind of rosy at the moment. There's a lot of depth in this squad. There's a lot of attacking talent. Some of the lineups we saw, you're watching this and you go, wow, they're really going for it. You know, it's, you know, Mitrovic and Vlahovic up front, Kostic on one wing, Lazovic on the other, Milinkovic-Savic is a kind of holding midfielder behind Dusan Tadic. There's a lot going on in terms of attacking thrust, and it makes Serbia incredibly exciting to watch. I think it's really exciting for this World Cup. It's a tricky group, but not an impossible one. Obviously, there's history with Switzerland, given, you know, the two went off at the last World Cup, and there was quite a lot of drama in that game. So I'm sure they'll be out for revenge in that regard. But yeah, it's a very, very exciting time for Serbia, and Alexander Mitrovic at the forefront of that right now.
If he scores against Brazil, I can't even imagine how much Twitter is going to explode.
Mitrovic.
It's written in the stars. Please, Mitrovic. That would be so epic. Although maybe we need to start calming the hype on him for obvious reasons. And one thing that I will support Serbia in the World Cup, but I am not copping that shirt. It is horrific, both the home and away, but the away in particular. Hey, it's like someone like a five-year-old got on a Microsoft Paint. Peter, you wanted to come in.
No, I was going to... it doesn't quite work, but I'll chip in anyway. There was a lot of unhappiness, I think, in Serbia about those shirts, I think, judging... At least, anyway, you could see it on social media reaction, but it's not warmly received.
I've got a Serbia shirt from the last World Cup, and it's really nice, the away, with the like flag down the middle of it as a kind of like feature. It's a really, really lovely shirt. So if you want a Serbia shirt for the World Cup, that's the one I'd recommend.
Well, the white one that Mitrovic scored the famous goal against Portugal is absolutely lovely. I'm hoping it might be a little bit cheaper, as it's obviously not the current edition. So I might get that one to show my support for Mitro, because that's an iconic shirt. But yeah, Puma have had an absolute stinker on this current set. Let's move on to some other Fulham names who played for their international teams. I mean, Peter, there isn't actually an awful lot to go off here. I know Decadova Reed played against Argentina for Jamaica. The Reggae Boys lost 3-0. Dan James played for Wales in Cardiff, and obviously Marek Rodak played. Any particular highlights from the rest of the international break, Peter? I didn't think there was an awful lot. Obviously, Luke Harris didn't get on the pitch, which would have been a big moment for him, but still amazing for him to be in the squad considering his age and his experience.
I think the sort of the main headlines, I suppose, are that Luke Harris was with the squad, that he, you know, has caught the eye enough to be involved and to be in that environment, and by all accounts seems to have had a good experience there, and you know, the Wales national team staff really do rate him quite highly and bodes very well going forward. And you know, even at this stage, he hasn't even played a league game, and he's already in that setup. That just, it speaks volumes, really, and it was already overachieving. So a good experience all round. But yeah, as you say, not too many other headlines. Obviously, Neeskens Cabano's picked up a knock. He went off against Burkina Faso in the 20th minute. And then he was released by DR Congo over the week, earlier this week, back to Fulham. So we'll have to find out how serious that is. And then, yeah, I mean, just going through, having a look down, I think Kieran Bowie's an interesting one. He scored for Scotland's under-21s, yeah. And he started very well on loan at Northampton as well. He's made a real impact there. So he's one to keep an eye on, especially as he keeps performing well for the Cobblers.
One I imagine you want to mention, Jack, is Ollie O'Neill.
Yeah, I mean, bad day for the under-21s. Should have won in the first leg of this under-21 European playoff against Israel. It was a 1-1 draw at Talat, but Ireland with the better side went to Tel Aviv, tried to basically scrape out a 0-0. It worked, went to penalties, and then Ireland missed all of their penalties, which was basically a bit of a shambles. But Ollie O'Neill came on for the under-21s, which is nice. And that squad is getting better and looks like the Ireland youth setups are improving, which is nice. Some interesting ones that I thought, you know, Matt Roddick, you mentioned there, conceded 3 goals over the 2 games to Azerbaijan and Belarus, so not the most successful international break for Marek. And Trapalhinha played for Portugal in the first game and then got moved to centre-back, which I thought was interesting. I haven't seen that before. Now, it's part of a funny story where basically the Portugal manager, Fernando Santos, has Thiago Jalo on the bench, who is a centre-back who plays for Lille, very competent centre-back, but has never made a Portugal appearance. And instead of, when his centre-back got injured, instead of bringing Thiago Jalo on, he moved Paulinho into centre-back. And afterwards in the press conference, basically they were like, why didn't you bring on Thiago Jalo? And he was like, oh, I completely forgot he was there.
No.
He was like, I'm so sorry. I apologize to Thiago Jalo. In my head, I just forgot about him at that moment. This man has never made a cap for Portugal. Your manager is forgetting about you. That is one of the biggest like faux pas I've seen in football for ages. So yeah, not a great.
There is a skill though. And you know, if you're not regularly a substitute, like I have had plenty of experience being, there is a skill to warming up in front of the manager and making sure that you're in his eyesight. And maybe that's not what he did. There is an art to it and making sure. I know that Jimmy Bullard famously said that he did that when he was pulled up for England, and he did like warm-ups in front of Fabio Capello to try and get his eyes, but without success.
How none of Santos's assistants flagged this, or any other member of staff?
Well, basically, he had João Mário kind of warmed up and ready to bring on, which is fine, who is a centre midfielder. And obviously then the injury comes, and instead of just being like, oh, I'm going to change the substitute, he's clearly gone, oh, what I could just do is just push Paulinho further back, which is fine, right? It's not a problem. But someone probably should have given him the heads up, yeah.
But for him not to then find out until like the press conference after, surely like someone during the game going, oh yeah, damn, like you know, you've only got 60 seconds or whatever to make a decision. I can almost understand the heat about the fact that he still didn't realise until someone pointed him out. Obviously I don't want this to happen, but I'm really hoping Peter one day gets the opportunity to do this to like Marco Silva. He's like, crap, I forgot about Kevin and Babu or something like that. He's on the bench.
A very strange one. Very strange one all round.
Let's discuss these Luke Harris rumours, which have kind of come out of nowhere. I don't know how much credence there is to them, but Luke Harris, apparently, Chelsea tabling a £30 million offer to buy him. As we mentioned earlier, he's not made a league appearance for Fulham yet, but he's obviously a striker who is very, very gifted, has scored an awful lot of goals, for the youth sides at all levels. Peter, I mean, it's crazy money for someone that hasn't played for us. It screams of kind of Patrick Roberts type offer when we got that, and it almost was like, well, if you're going to offer that amount of money, then maybe we're going to have to take it. But I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, that as soon as Fulham get a decent youth player, even when you tie him to a contract, we thought, great, this is it. We can relax and we can hope that we can hold on to him, and still the vultures come swooping.
I mean, it's inevitable that Harris will attract interest, and we talked about it before about you know, how big clubs are looking at him. Of course they are. In terms of the bid and the offer, that's not something I'd heard. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case, but that a club like Chelsea are looking at him is wouldn't be a surprise. I think the fears you mentioned, now that it's been reported, it's interesting because it then floats a valuation, doesn't it, I suppose. And it's an impressive number for someone who's not played a league game yet. Harris obviously signed his first professional contract in the same week that he got his Wales call up. For him and, you know, for those around him and for the club, Fulham is the best place to be right now for his development. He's been, there's real encouragement that he's been involved with the first team under Marco Silva. The warm words that Marco Silva said about him, that he will be getting minutes. I don't see Luke Harris leaving in the short term. I just don't see that happening for now. But things can change quickly. We saw that, of course, with Carvalho, but not for me at the moment. I think, as with Carvalho, it was the second contract that becomes difficult. And, you know, Fulham have given Harris a three-year deal. That's the most they can offer under FIFA regulations for someone under 18. That's naturally is a problem if you're a club like Fulham, when there are bigger clubs trying to swoop and take your players. So how they manage the situation is important. How they manage the pressure now is important, because he's on a lot of people's radars. I'm not just talking in terms of, you know, clubs. I'm talking about people in general. You know, people are aware of him. You know, in football sense, his life is sort of changing quite quickly, and he's still very young. So this is a pretty important period in his career, and he's exceptionally talented. You know, we talked about the goals he scored from midfield. He has that natural ability to pop up in the penalty area to score goals. Something he's had ever since he was young. Joined Fulham at 14. Did a piece last week, just touching on his journey so far and you know why he's ended up in the Wales squad. But for now, it's Fulham is where he's best for him. There's no doubt about that.
And Peter, I'm sure you might want to bring up the article that you've written about Luke Harris. This time last week, I think you released it. A great kind of insight into his development and how he's kind of risen to prominence in the last, it's really 6 months, I feel like. I mean, we kind of knew he was on the radar maybe 6 months ago, but no one was really talking about him until this season.
It's an interesting one, because his talent was known. Like, we knew about it. I knew about it. But because he was so young, you didn't talk it up so much. For the under 18s, I think, you know, when he was still a schoolboy, age 15, he was scoring goals and contributed to when they won the National League South under Steve Wigley. Scored again a hatful of goals for the under 21s last season, again under Wigley, and then also chipping in for Ali Malul's under 18 side too. It's been quite consistent. And just in the piece, we touched on the fact that he's from Jersey. Obviously, had the choice of playing for any one of the four UK nations, but there's no doubt there's no chance he'll be playing for England. Obviously, he's had his Welsh call up, but there's a strong Welsh connection on his father's side of the family. And it just touches on that, really. He joined Fulham age 14. Obviously, there are actually specific rules regarding players leaving Jersey at a younger age, and as you'd expect, at academy level. But came in, went to Coombe School, and is the latest sort of to emerge from Motspur Park, really. The track record that they have now is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I know we there's a frustration about players, A, getting into the first team and making sure that Fulham get the right price for these talented players that they're producing. But on a basic level of the fact that they are producing these players with such consistency, really deserves a lot of credit, because it's not easy, and certainly not easy for a club that's in London competing with some very well-established academies and clubs that can offer and do offer, can offer not just more money, but can invest more money into their setup. So, another player with potential. We have to stress that, because he's only 17. And as Marco Silva said when he was asked about it in the pre-match press conference for Forest, following Harris's call-up, you know, they don't want to put too much pressure on him. It's got to be the right steps, the right progress. But if you've got the talent, then you'll be involved. And I'm sure it won't be long before we see him play in the league.
I mean, it is amazing, Jack, that this academy pipeline just continues to churn out players. Like, okay, we've lost Carvalho. That's annoying. Right onto the net. And I remember thinking, oh, well, is there another big hope in the academy? I feel like we'll be waiting a few years. And along comes Luke Harris. Yes, I know he hasn't played yet, and it's not quite at Carvalho levels, but still just the the pipeline of talents is amazing. And, you know, let's not get into the whole can we keep them, all of that, because we've done it so many times. But it's just impressive, isn't it, really, that we continue to just bring through these players. And I feel like we are starting to see real fruit from what has been decades of labour since Fulham actually started taking their academy seriously, or at least from the outside perspective, it seemed like that was when they took it seriously.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on, right? It's just, it's a brilliant, brilliant pipeline that continues to churn out talent. And, you know, I've mentioned on the pod before, but it's not just about bringing through the absolute top quality. It's, you know, the academy can be a source. You know, if you bring players through that play kind of any level of professional football, that's a success, a major success. And it should be kind of seen as such as well, because those things are incredibly important. You know, it's not just about being the club. It's about giving opportunities to people who, you know, can then go and make a living from football, and allowing people who have talent to flourish, you know, at whatever level that ends up being at. But yeah, I think obviously the headline names are always going to kind of steal the spotlight. And it just seems to be such a wonderful process at the moment. It's, you know, a rich catchment area, let's be honest, in terms of, you know, the talent available, and that Fulham can bring in players from kind of across South London and, you know, across West London as well. These are catchment areas that are, you know, we've seen some wonderful footballers kind of across the country come out of these kind of areas of London, and ultimately Fulham need to be tapping into that, and right now we are, and that feels like such a source of pride, I think is a major point, but also just a source of something that the club can be rightly, you know, excited about for the future. And that, you know, if things continue to go this well, you know, and you continue to produce very, very, very top quality players, other players will want to come in, you know, young players who will go, okay, I've seen, you know, Fulham aren't the biggest name in London by a significant margin, I would say. And, you know, we still have players here who'll be looking at, you know, at young ages and going, right, what's the best career path for me? Where's the best place that I can go for my development? And the more you see players coming out on at the top level, your Carvalhos, your Sessegnons, Luke Harris, the latest, obviously, off this line, you know, and that's going to inspire young players to be like, right, maybe Fulham is the place for me to go and, you know, continue my development, because we've seen that there are, the results speak for themselves. And I think that's an important point as well.
And just before we take a break, Peter, another article that you did this week was speaking to Steve Jay, the manager of the Fulham women team. You went to the game against Ebbsfleet at Motspur Park, which Fulham lost 2-0. They also had a game on Sunday, which they won 2-0 against AFC Acorns. They're currently mid-table in their division. You've got a few established names in there, like Sutton United and Millwall Lionesses. And we know that Fulham Women is not at the level that we often see on the telly. It's not even really that close to what you might see in the WSL or the Championship below it. Fulham are kind of doing it their own way. What did Steve have to say, though, when you spoke to him after that Ebbsfleet game?
Yeah, I think I chose the wrong game. Should have gone to the Acorns game rather than a 2-0 defeat. It was unhappy with the loss. But yeah, no, it was good to catch up with Steve Jay and the progress that the team are making. You know, it's no secret they want to get out of this division. As we've written before and talked about, it's a hard division with one promotion spot. There are clubs who are all pushing in the same direction, really, to try and to take that step up. Fulham have in the last couple of years increase their investment, particularly in the last year with the women's team coming under the performance side of the club, no longer the charity arm, the Fulham Foundation. So that comes under the remit of Hugh Jennings in his head of football development role. And, you know, they've increased their staff numbers. They've done so again. They've added an under 18 side this year as well to help improve the pathway. And we talked about how they want basically to have that local role, that local community element of getting girls to play football and improving participation while also having a strong senior side. So in that sense, they've done okay. Obviously, it's two defeats already this season is disappointing, particularly considering their expectations. But, you know, it was good to speak to Steve about not just Fulham women and the progress they need to make, but also the Euros as well and the success that England have had and what that can do. You know, Steve spoke really well about how, you know, he went to, I think, the quarterfinals and the final. He went to the quarterfinals by himself, and he said he found it quite a moving experience to see that many people supporting the national team, being so invested in the national team, in the women's game. And, you know, and part of that is visibility. It's seeing people playing that sport saying, oh, I can do that. You know, why can't I play this sport? This is a sport for me. And part of that, I think, from a Fulham perspective, is playing at Craven Cottage, which is something that should be on the agenda and something that Jay feels would be a real step forward. And that looks like something that could happen. So they're certainly making steps forward. They're small steps forward. And as you say, Fulham aren't at that level of the teams you see on the TV. And but there has been progress over the last year, particularly. They're improving their squad. They've added a couple more players in the summer, and now it's just about getting out of the division. That's the target. That's the challenge. And you know, you can clearly see that the patterns of play, that the style they're adopting, it's a similar 4-3-3 to what we see with the men's team. And now it's just about getting the results and getting up the tiers.
I think playing at Craven Cottage would be a massive step forward. I think that it would send such a signal. We've seen, you know, huge success of other clubs doing that. I don't think, you know, Fulham's not going to rebuild this overnight into turning it into the, you know, you saw I watched quite a bit of the Arsenal Spurs game where there was about 45,000 to 50,000 at the Emirates, and Arsenal won, I think, 4-0 in the end, and were really impressive. It was a good game, and like actually Spurs weren't that bad either, but obviously Arsenal just a bit of a level above. And you'd love to see Fulham women get to that stage, but like playing at Motspur Park, it's not as easy for people to get to. It's not as attractive, as people don't, it's unfamiliar to people as well. Not many people have been to Motspur Park or would know how to get there specifically. I think when it's at Craven Cottage, people are just comfortable. They know how to get there. They know their routines. They know where to go. I think it would be such a huge step forward. And it'd be interesting to see if they can build that. If you want to read either of Peter's articles on Luke Harris or the Fulham women team, it's all on The Athletic right now. Okay, we're going to take a break, and afterwards we'll look ahead to Saturday's game against Newcastle. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James here with Jack Collins and Peter Rutzler. Talking of other teams playing at Craven Cottage, we were just mentioning in the break that the Fulham under-21s team are playing Valencia at Craven Cottage. Valencia under-21s, I should point out, not the first team of Valencia.
Although, to be fair, Valencia are the youngest team in Europe, so it's actually not that much difference.
Well, it's at 7 o'clock at Craven Cottage on Wednesday in the Premier League International Cup, if you fancy going down there to support the lads. Should be a decent atmosphere. I know they played a game at Craven Cottage last year, and it was a decent turnout for that one. So hopefully it'll be a decent turnout. They're playing some quite good teams, quite fun teams in this International Cup over the next few months or so. I saw that get announced. They were all in England, and everyone was like, wait, where's the European tour? I want to go to Valencia to watch the under-21s. I don't want these games to be in England. Everyone's just needs to wait 6 months. The Conference League is coming. You'll be able to get your passports out then. But the first step to getting that Conference League spot is to beat Newcastle on Saturday back in the Premier League, back at Craven Cottage. It's been a while. We didn't play a game at Craven Cottage in September after the Chelsea game was postponed. Against Eddie Howe's Newcastle, who have had a weird start to the season, Jack, drawing an awful lot of games, but resilient, had some good performances in there, shouldn't have lost really the game they did lose to Liverpool, took Man City all the way, probably unlucky not to win it, had they just held on. But there have also been some kind of meek games in there, typified by their 1-1 draw against Bournemouth last time out. Don't really know what to make of them, but maybe not a bad time to be facing them because they've also got some injuries, which is helpful.
Yeah, they haven't been very good on the road, which has been quite enough strange. They were okay at Molineux. That was probably the best game that they played. And they obviously, as you mentioned, the Anfield game. But that Liverpool side are a bit all over the place at the moment. And yeah, I think that obviously this is a very good squad. And they've been very impressive over the last sort of, well, let's say 8 months, 9 months or so. And so obviously it's going to be a tricky test. But yeah, it does feel like a good time to be playing them. Bruno Guimarães looks like he might play. He left the Brazil training camp instead of playing in the second game against Ghana. So he looks to be like he might be back in the rotation by that point. But Alex Isak picked up an injury on Sweden duty. Chris Wood picked up an injury on New Zealand duty. And Callum Wilson is still, you know, according to Newcastle sources, being, I open quotes, wrapped in cotton wool. So yeah, it does look like they might lack a focal point. So that might be something. And I think that it's probably, you know, worth thinking about that. Nick Pope wasn't great for England in that game against Germany, I didn't think. So a lot of players maybe a little bit out of, you know, not out of kilter, perhaps is probably the right word. It's, you know, obviously going to be an incredibly difficult test. We're missing Polinia, which is going to be, something that Marcus Silva is going to have to deal with. Obviously, there was an article on the website from Jack Stroudley about this and how we kind of deal with the Polinia sized hole in the midfield. So that's going to be a very interesting thing for Marcus to have to deal with. But yeah, it does feel like we're playing Newcastle at a relatively good time. You know, they haven't had a massive chance to kind of reinvigorate this squad because a lot of them will have gone off on international duty. There's been these injuries, as we mentioned before, and they're not in the greatest run of form, but still a very good side.
I mean, they seem resilient, Peter. I could very much see this being a draw. Whilst, you know, they're going to lack goals with the injuries that they've got. Fulham are obviously not at 100% either. And to be honest, I would probably still take a draw. But that's the beauty of Fulham's position now that we're in, that you can kind of take draws. Like a draw against Newcastle at home would just be a nice, steady, stable result. Would I love to win? Would it be fantastic to win? Yes. But like, you still got to treat Newcastle with respect. They've invested heavily. And whilst things haven't quite gone their way, it's been fine margins, to trademark a certain former manager.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to repeat fine margins. That's how it can roll. And they've had some good performances. They were unlucky in a couple of games. Liverpool comes to mind with the late Carvalho goal. The injuries make it an opportunity, but considering that Fulham are without Palinha, it's almost fortunate in a way that Newcastle have their own issues, almost an equaliser in a way. And I think for me, that the most important thing is maintaining those performance levels at the Cottage, because they have been the backbone to this strong start to the season. Those first half opening salvos where Fulham come at teams, make them realise that it's not going to be a nice trip to the banks of the Thames and make teams work. And that's been a trademark, and Capellini has been really important in that, you know, with his aggressive ball winning, his physicality, and just maintaining that. Those principles that Fulham have established will be really important. And you know, the start has been good. That a point would, as you say, Sammy, would be a respectable result. And it's probably testament to, you know, how well Fulham have done. Their expectations have grown a little bit, you know, coming into home games like this. Newcastle without some key players, think, well, why can't Fulham win? And that's a good thing, as much as it can be, you know, it can distort the, you know, what's expected. But to have that belief in your players, the belief in the team that's shared both within the squad and then on the terraces, it's a really, really good position to be in. So, yeah, ahead of a good month, maintaining that momentum from Forest, which is just a fantastic result, a really fantastic result, to get October off to the best start, because the fixtures in October are massive. If October ends with 0 points, which it won't, it can change everything because of who they're playing. Let's see. And I think, you know, starting well will be a beast.
I touched wood on behalf of everyone when he said that we won't get 0 points October there for you, Peter.
Sound the horn.
It hopefully is a good run of fixtures. Newcastle at home, West Ham away, Bournemouth at home, Villa at home, Leeds away, Everton at home. That is a nice Premier League run of fixtures. So important ahead of the World Cup that we do get a couple of wins. And if we can start it on Saturday, then that'd be fantastic. Jack, I feel like there's been so much debate over who should start Polinia, because it's kind of fallen in an international break where there's not been so much to talk about. So I think the topic that's on everyone's lips is what we do. What would you do?
Chalobah. I wouldn't switch the system up. It's been working, and Chalobah is the most like-for-like player that we have. Obviously, you know, there is a drop-off in quality. I don't think anybody's denying that. But in terms of actual stylistic nature, I think that Chalobah is the person best set to actually fill the exact role that Polinia does. And look, we talked about this last year, right? We were saying in games where Marcus Silva was starting Chalobah and Harrison Reed together, that he was maybe thinking about that with the Premier League in mind, that there's slightly more defensive element to that duo than that there was with some of the other midfields that we saw last year across the course of the season. So I think that he will keep to put Chalobah in there. I think he is the natural kind of fit to drop in there, and maybe Pereira's asked to drop a little bit deeper to just to help out with a little bit, you know, of those defensive worries without Polinia in the team. I think that's probably what I would do.
And maybe a Decadova Reed as well to help with the kind of like lack of the lessened defensive output as well. Obviously Decadova Reed is very good at defending from the front. The game that I go back to when I think of like the best Chalobah Reed performance was Middlesbrough away. A really, really difficult game. Obviously, one of the most important games, I think, of Fulham's promotion. And, you know, going to a stadium that was a fortress at the time, we actually ended up turning it into very much not a fortress ever since we got that result. But at the time we went there, it was a hugely difficult game. And they battled and they scrapped and they just about managed to kind of keep the midfield battle even. And so I think if we can take some learnings from that, I personally think it should be Chalobah as well. I know I've seen all of the theories, sticking Diop at DM, or you could put Kearney there and maybe drop Pereira deeper, have Reed doing that role. But I just think, personally, keep it simple. Peter, what would you do?
Yeah, no, I'm in the Chalobah camp basically for every reason that Jack said. I think the one other element to the way Fulham are playing is that, you know, Harrison Reed is covering a lot of ground. Obviously we saw him score against Forest, but he's sort of playing as an eight, but also with a lot of six responsibilities. And he works very well on that right-hand side. It's a position he's been playing for the past, 12 months. His combinations with both Kenny Tetta and whoever was Harry Wilson before, of course, and whether it's Bobby Decadova Reed or Willian, as we saw against Forest, that worked really quite nicely. He knows that position and that area of the field quite well. And I think I wouldn't want to disrupt that. That said, I don't see a reason why Tom Kearney can't play. Now, I think Tom Kearney's had some pretty good influences in the games where he's come on. I think that's actually suiting him quite well as a role, whether that's to see out games, to retake control of games. I mean, he had a great impact against Tottenham. I think the question is, do you then play with essentially two tens and then Reed in the six? And I think that disrupts pretty much what Fulham have done quite a bit so far this season. Basically, as Jack said, I would try and keep things as familiar as possible, as what is possible, because, you know, there'll be maybe knocks and things like that. So, yeah, I think it will be Chalobah. I think, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it's he played well against Borough last season, and I think he has the attributes that are closest to what Polinia brings. But at the same time, whoever comes in is not going to be Jao Polinia. Polinia is very unique in what he does, his influence. We've seen the stats, you know, most tackles in what Europe's top five leagues, and that's hard to replace. But I think maintaining that balance that they've got in midfield is important. Because I think for Kearney to do well, you'll want to be playing against a team that's sitting off and won't necessarily require that industry element, because that's, for all that Kearney can do it, I think Chalobah probably could do that better. So that's for me.
But also a formidable midfield opponent against Bruno Guimarães, who is going to want to run that midfield. This is a
yeah, and Joe Linton as well. I mean, Joe Linton as a midfielder now, it seems to suit him so well in terms of his physical attributes, and that suggests it's going to be quite competitive in there. And I think Fulham will probably have to try and match that.
And the other starting debate really is going to be defence. Jack, it all really rests on the fitness of A, Robinson, and B, Kazawa. I would really like for us not to have to play the same system that we did against Forest. It just about worked. Ream did actually play very well, but I personally do not see it as a long-term option. Because, yeah, I think either against Almiron or Sam Maximan, whoever starts in that right wing for Newcastle will have a lot of fun if they're going toe-to-toe with Tim Ream. So I guess we just got to hope that mostly hope that Robinson's fit, but I guess if Kazawa's managed to get some fitness over the international break, then great. But the fact that he wasn't even on the bench against Forest suggests that that's quite a steep rise from not in squad to starting.
Yeah. It's one of those we haven't heard very much. Obviously, the press conferences aren't until later in the week, so just one we've got to wait and see on.
Yeah. Right. Well, we'll take a break there. Fingers crossed Fulham can do the business on Saturday against Newcastle. Afterwards, we've got a couple of questions. Fulhamish is brought to you by Green King, your home of pub sport. They've got over 900 sports pubs across the country because Green King is where the fans go, showing every broadcast game for Fulham. So head down to your nearest pub and you can enjoy every live sporting event from BT and Sky Sports on tap. And if you download the Green King season ticket app, you can receive a free drink when you register and get 10% off a great range of drinks 1 hour before, during and after any match. So head to the app store and search season ticket to download the app. And when registering, if you use the promotion code Fulhamish, one word, capital letters, as a listener of this show, you'll get an additional £5 off when you spend £15 on drinks. So make sure you download the Green King season ticket app, use the code Fulhamish, that's all one word, capital letters, and you'll get an additional £5 off when you spend £15 on drinks. That's from Green King, is where the fans go, your home of pub sport. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy here with Jack and Peter. This will catch on in a second, but let's get into some questions. This first one from John Stevens Hall says, "Hi there, it looked to me that we made an adjustment in the second half of the Forest game by pulling Mitro back into a deep false nine and letting him make plays. Does this corroborate with how you guys saw the game?" I mean, certainly that third goal, Peter, Mitro was in that kind of deep-lying playmaker almost position to make that pass to Decker Dover-Reed, which sets that move going. He is capable of doing that, isn't he? If he has limited success in the first half, dropping deeper and kind of dictating the play from deep. I mean, we've seen it last season, but Mitro likes, I think, kind of relishes that role as well if he has to.
Yeah, I mean, he was involved in all three goals, wasn't he? I think the obviously one from the corner, he makes a block, and the second one as well is in the same area of the field. So, you know, he skips past a couple of challenges, plays the ball to Reed, I think. And then gives it to Willian, and Willian then sets up, Kenny Tete sets up Jao Palhinha. But yeah, I don't think that was a specific kind of tweak. I just think Mitrovic does that. That's just part of his game now. Maybe it was. Maybe I sort of missed it. But, you know, we saw it all last season. We've talked about how his role has evolved. And that part of that evolution is not just him scoring goals in the penalty area. It's being a full target man that disrupts opposition defences and can bring others into play. It's similar, I'm not saying it's the same, similar to what Kane does at Tottenham, but Kane does it to an exceptional level as a number 10, and his passing is, I think, a lot better than Mitrovic's. I don't think that's Mitrovic's best attribute. But at the same time, what we've seen from Mitrovic in the past 12 to 18 months is that he can do it and do it very well. You know, we talked a lot about the combinations he would make with Harry Wilson on that right-hand side last season, those round the corner passes, and he is able to drop into central areas to create overloads in the middle of the pitch, to bring the wide players in, to use those onward runners, and we saw that to good effect against Forest, and that's just a weapon that Fulham now have in their armoury, and probably something that's massively overlooked by everyone who doesn't actually watch Fulham, because Mitrovic is able to do that. He is able to play in a more well-rounded way. I think his average touch positions, I remember doing a piece last year compared to what he'd done before, had dropped significantly for Fulham in the Championship, because he is getting involved in the play and he's allowed to do that, and Silva wants him to do that. And, you know, he said it himself. He said it after he broke the Ivan Toney's record. When I spoke to him after the game, he talked about that's what he's been allowed to do and the different elements to his game now. So, yeah, it's definitely something that he's great at, and it's just helpful for Fulham. It's another weapon in their arsenal.
I did just quickly bring this up, Sammy, in terms of the stats. I just went on my 23 toolbox and had a little look at both his passing networks and his event count maps for the first and second half. There's no major drop-off, to be perfectly honest with you. He drops a little bit deeper. You'd imagine if you're picturing the kind of opposition half in the first half, he's pretty much bang between the centre spot and the penalty box. He's slightly more towards the centre spot in the second half. I think maybe what's most interesting is actually the wingers are pushed up for much higher, as is Andreas Pereira's position in that second half. So actually, maybe it's not necessarily so much that Mitrovic dropped off any further than he usually did. I think it might have been more that other players were actually getting in front of him. And then providing him with those kind of passing triangles, those passing options, because they all seem to have moved up a little bit further in this second half. His events map pretty much reads similarly. Yes, in the first half, he actually has more touches in the kind of center circle spot, that five, kind of five in there and five out on the wide, but deep, and kind of one or two in the box. In the second half, he touches the ball pretty much everywhere, although there are more pickups and more events that he does in our own half. In the second half, so maybe that's maybe worth pointing out, but that's just the raw data. I haven't had a chance to really kind of contextualize it. I just pulled it up while you were while Peter was speaking. So yeah, a little bit, but maybe it's as much to do with the players around him as necessarily to do with traditional tactical tweak.
In the context of this season as well, you know, Fulham aren't dominating the ball as much, so Mitrovic won't be doing that as often as we probably would have seen him do last year because Fulham aren't using him in build up as much. But he can still do it, and it's still something that they can use, and that worked very well against Forest.
Another question here from Wes. He says, hello, Fulhamish. As a long-time listener and fan of the podcast, I want to say thank you for all the brilliant commentary and insights in good time and bad. You've given me a priceless connection to Fulham as I've been living away from the UK for the past 7 years. He says, a question for the panel. In the recent Willian Athletic piece, he mentions his adaptability to play on either a wing or as a number 10. I thought he had a brilliant full debut and was a key player in all three Fulham goals. Given that we have considerable competition on both wings once Wilson and Solomon are fit, do you think Silva might consider playing Willian in the midfield triangle? Before you answer that question, I just want to say that that article from Simon Johnson on Willian is really, really fascinating. I learned a lot. Mostly he wants to become a football agent when he's done, which I certainly had never even heard of that kind of route, certainly for not a top level player. Definitely worth a read. But yeah, your thoughts on Wes, and he adds at the bottom of the email that he's in Tim Ream's hometown of St. Louis. So thank you, Wes.
Well, yeah, he's capable of doing it. He has done it before and in the past. I think when you watch him play, when he plays on the left, he likes to drift in field. Sort of a bit wider, I think, against Forest. But it's in his arsenal. I don't think that would be something that Fulham would want to go to straight away, unless it was probably forced, because there are other options there, like Tom Kearney, Pereira, of course, and Luke Harris. We should factor him into that position. But it does help in games. It does help if you've got injuries. It does help having a player of that kind of familiarity means that you can step into that role. If he's coming inside, if he's playing in wider areas, and that's where his experience, you know, tells. But yeah, it's an option. But I think considering the energy required in that number 10 position, not that Willian can't do it, but I don't think it's his best strength.
No, I think that there's also just so much competition. I'm not sure how great that looks to Tom Kearney either if Willian gets the number 10 role. If ever something happened to Andreas Pereira, I'd like to think he is the incumbent for that role if Pereira ever can't play a match. I mean, I just, that piece though, Willian's just like, seemed like a really level head. I don't know why maybe I'd just maybe put Willian down in a box of being a bit of a flamboyant, just classic, just player that's come over here and hasn't got much to say. But actually I've really learned something from this piece about Willian. I definitely give it a read, and I do hope that his potential future career as a football agent goes well. I did enjoy one part of the piece though, where he blamed some of his bad times at Corinthians on the pitches. He was just like, the pitches weren't good enough for me. I was like, okay, I'm sure everyone else has to deal with the bad pitches. Is there something that Willian can't cope unless it's an absolute
carpet?
Yeah,
but maybe if you've been used to playing in the Premier League on carpets for, you know, quite some time, it's a bit of a culture shock. Now, I don't think it's an excuse, but
he needs to get down to some of the pitches that I play Sunday League on and see how
that's the difference, Tommy. That's a very different question, isn't it? It's like one of those quite strange ones. But alas, no, I think it's fair. A couple of players have become agents, haven't they? The Mattia Kesman is Sergej Milinkovic-Savic's agent. Deco works for Georges Mensch. I'm pretty sure Yakubu's an agent. So yeah, there's that. That's all I can think of for right now. But I'm pretty sure there's a couple of players who have gone on to become agents. But yeah, it's a really good article, and I really enjoyed it as well.
Final question is from David Smith. He says, hi guys, a question for a quieter pod. I guess international break is as good as any. David, you need to become the producer. You've fully understood the schedule. I've been keeping an eye on the fate of our release list, and I'm really disappointed to see that Michael Hector is still a free agent. Given his performances in the Scott Parker promotion season, he has clearly shown himself to be a championship level defender. He hasn't been linked with anyone since he's been released and is still only 30. Does anyone have any idea what has happened? Do you think he has just got fed up with moving house? I mean, their last one is a potential. His list of clubs in his career is totally absurd. I'm surprised, Peter, not to see Michael Hector get picked up. Like, I remember those three games last year where Tosin got sent off against West Brom and Michael Hector had to play. I think we kept a couple of clean sheets. I think generally Hector was pretty solid. I think more than proved that he's fully capable at championship level. Yes, he had a bit of a rotter in that final Sheffield United game. Who didn't? I am shocked as well to not see Michael Hector pick up a club. I just wonder if there's something going on, an injury or, yeah, hard to work, put your finger on that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised too that he hasn't picked up, because he's more than good enough at that level, the upper end of the championship table. There's no doubt about that for me. But it's, you know, I think the question sort of touched on it a little bit. There are a lot of factors, not just for the player, but also for clubs at the moment. You know, you've got to be in the right environment, the right place when you're 30 and have a family. You've got to make sure that the right step is good for everyone. So, but yeah, no, I don't have an idea why specifically. Or the championship has become. There's a lot less money in the championship, which makes it difficult. But at the same time, as a free agent, you know, Michael Hector would be a really good pickup for somebody. So, I can't give you a concrete answer, unfortunately.
I saw him linked with a return to Aberdeen earlier this month, which I thought might be quite nice. But yeah, I'd imagine that there's a very decent player there. Still got a couple of years left in him for someone who's willing to take a chance. So good luck to him.
Yeah, I really hope that he does find the club that suits him best, and he'll forever be Virgil van Mike to us. Right, a couple of this will catch ons before we finish. Both of them for João Palhinha, which is hilarious because we've just got ourselves a really good established chart for João Palhinha. But anyway, it's funny, and he is flavour of the month at the moment, so let's do it. First one is from Maximilian Catalano. He just writes, song for Zhao, just a banger for a banging player. Keep up the good work at the podcast, lads. It's another one that I have no idea what the tune is for, but it's amusing.
Come on, then.
So maybe Jack might be able to work it out this time. I'm pretty sure it's not Hamilton, but it might be because I don't know the soundtrack. So here we go.
Oh, I know what this is.
I can't stop this feeling. Deep inside of me, Zhao, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you mock them, put the press on tight, you let Reem know everything's alright. I love Zhao Palhinha. He's gonna two-foot ya and get a yellow car. I love Zhao Palhinha.
That's Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede, which was kind of reintroduced, I suppose, to modern parlance by the Guardians of the Galaxy film. So there you go. But yeah, really, really good song.
I tried to Shazam it and I couldn't work it out. Yeah. People need to put the song titles in the email. But anyway,
no, it's I like it. It's part of the game. I like it. I like it a lot too. That was fun. I enjoyed the line about being two-footed. That was good. And also very well put together. Well, you know, nicely in tune. I had a good time. Yeah, good.
Good. Yeah, loved it. Nice one, Maximilian. Very much enjoyed that one. Definitely a banger for a banging player. And finally, this one from Andrew Johnston. He says, to whomever it may concern, I thought you might like this parody rendition of My Eyes Adore You by Frankie Valli that I wrote in ode of the main man, João Palhinha. Who knows? It might just catch on. This is sensational.
João Palhinha, the sunny Lisbon to play for Marco Silva.
was so good. That I love that song so much. It's one of my favorite songs. I never thought we'd hear a version of My Eyes Adored You on This Will Catch On about a Portuguese midfielder, but here we are. Here we are. That was wonderful. That genuinely wonderful. That was exceptional. Sometimes I'm like, I love them because I'm giggling away, and sometimes I love them because they're just really beautifully put together, and that was just excellent, wasn't it? Absolutely excellent.
A high quality stuff.
Yeah, really high quality. This Will Catch On's today. I mean, he says the lyrics, João Pelini is world class. Well, I would say Andrew Johnston's world class with that parody rendition. Just utterly beautiful. But put it on Spotify. I'd have that in my playlist. Like, get it professionally recorded. Put it on Spotify. That's on my playlist.
Get them to play that before games. Stick it on the PA.
You know, there's that lad. I can't remember his name now. He sings Liverpool songs.
Jamie
Webster.
Webster.
Maybe Andrew Johnston is our Jamie Webster. Like, if we do, like, we get to a, maybe when we go on the Conference League and, you know, we take over a square or something like that, we need to put Andrew on stage singing Fulham songs. He's got the musicality. He's got the rhythm. He's got the songs.
And the voice.
And he's got the voice. I think that's Andrew's destiny for us. Anyway, thank you, mate. I love that. That's absolutely fantastic. World class, as we said. And that'll do for today's podcast. We need to name it. Now, I did put a request into the Fulhamish Telegram group. Not a huge response, but see if any of these tickle your fancy. Mitro's goal scoring tune. Mitro Mag's hat trick from Dan Cook. Joe CB said, "Who is Haaland?" Joe Johnson said, "Mitro's in tune." I came up with a couple, which it's Mitro's Tyne.
Nice. That is good.
The superb Serb as well. Jack, what one do you think works best?
I like Mitro's in tune. I think that's excellent. That's very good. I'm gonna nibble on that. Thanks very much.
No worries. That's a perfect pod name. All right. Thank you very much for listening today, and thank you very much to my guest, Jack Collins.
Thank you, Sammy, for having me as ever.
And Peter Rutzler.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Right, enjoy the game if you're going this weekend. The trains are an absolute state, so probably start leaving on Friday evening if you want to get to Craven Cottage on time for that one. Have a lovely weekend. We'll be back on Sunday evening. I think Dan Cook is hosting the podcast for the first time. So come on the Dan Cook. So show him all your love and support for that pod on Sunday, reacting to everything that happens in the Newcastle game. And we'll have another Thursday club for you this time next week. So until then, come on, you Whites.
You Whites.